Welcome to the podcast, Doctor to Doctor, with Dr. Paul Anderson, answering questions and discussing relevant topics in medicine. Welcome to our podcast on mitochondria. This is always a really big, heavy topic, and there's a lot of, obviously a lot of the CE webinars relate to it, but I thought this would be a good one for a podcast just to kind of go through the big picture stuff. So the first thing to think about with respect to mitochondria, because, you know, as opposed to maybe a number of years ago when they were kind of theoretically known about, and of course we tried to, quote-unquote, feed them, et cetera, and we knew there were some really, really bad mitochondrial diseases, we really have not understood them as well as we have in the last five or so years. And now with looking at broader levels of genomic influence and mitochondrial toxicity and, you know, all of these other things that, like I say, we knew were theoretically possible, but really could only see in their worst, worst forms, what we now realize is that if the mitochondria go down or go bad, if they go down far enough, you're dead. But if they go bad, the thing that happens then is the rest of the cell, the cytosol, and the organelles start to go down, and then the membrane goes down, and you sort of die from the inside out or get sick from the inside out. So one of the things that I find very important but also frustrating clinically is they have to be healed either concurrently or first, in the case of, you know, most chronically ill folks, and really even in people who've had a, you know, some sort of sidelining sort of injury, et cetera. The mitochondria are terribly, terribly important. So I want to just go through this in a really linear order, hopefully, work right off of the show notes and talk as in-depth as possible for a podcast. So the first thing is the question of how they work. So the idea of oxidative phosphorylation or OxPhos is pretty well known. We have the chemiosmotic theory of OxPhos, and that's sort of grown into a little bit more modern understanding of how the different respiratory chain complexes work. But as you know, the purpose of the mitochondria is to be well insulated through the outer and inner membrane. Mitochondria can take up nutrient substrate if needed. Mitochondria, through the help of the carnitine shuttle, can take up fat to be beta oxidized into energy substrate. So all of that goes on there. One of the reasons why carnitine and acetylcarnitine become so important in recovering mitochondria and recovering sick tissues is that without that, then you can't get your high value, you know, fatty acids in to be beta oxidized. So they're well insulated so that the activity of OxPhos can go on and run the ATPase pump, which of course takes ADP and turns it into ATP. Or if you have a two-step process, it's AMP, monophosphate, to ADP, and then ADP to ATP. Either way, you wind up with ATP, and because of the law of diffusion that ATP can work on, ADP goes in as ATP is produced and goes out. So another thing to consider just around the dynamics, etc., is if you have dysfunctional mitochondria and you're not making ATP very well, or the membrane is leaky or any other number of things, if you are not pumping out a lot of ATP, the ADP substrate is going to back up. And basically it's not a terribly useful substrate once it becomes in the D form, the diphosphate form. Because if you remember from chemistry, it's that last bond that really is the dynamics in the respiratory chain. The first thing to consider is you have to have some substrate go in. And so basic substrates include hydrogen moving around and the hydrogen ion becoming free, if you will. So the first substrate which helps us to get a hydrogen ion in is going to be the NAD molecule. And so if you look at NADH, that is going to help prime the mitochondrial respiratory chain, because what's going to happen is that the hydrogen is going to be cleaved. And what happens when you have hydrogen cleaved is you can either have H plus or H ion. And so what happens then is that the electron is borrowed from the hydrogen, run down through the inner membrane on the respiratory chain, and a number of those electrons borrowed from the hydrogens are going to run the respiratory chain through the complexes and make basically electricity, essentially, which is going to make ATP again at the bottom of the chain. So if we don't have things like NAD and we don't have fatty acids that can be broken down and we don't have the other nutrients along the way, that's one way that the mitochondria can go down. Another way they go down is if there's damage to the mitochondrial membrane and you wind up with maybe you're not holding the substrate in or out that you need to. So it's just like a cell membrane problem, only it's a mitochondrial membrane. And then, of course, in the respiratory chain, you have a large number of what would be intermediate structures, which are mostly nutrient in orientation. And so you have things like ubiquinone or CoQ10. You have some sulfur molecules attached to some iron. Iron has two positions in the mitochondria, which is why when iron stores drop, let's say you have a low ferritin or something, people start to lose energy. It's partly because of oxygen carrying, but also because the respiratory chain is not being meeting its demands, etc. So that's very important also. But all those substrate nutrients that are in there become very, very important as well. And of course, the punchline then is, if I have these borrowed hydrogens and I oxidize them, so the idea between oxphos is to oxidize the hydrogen, borrow the electron, and then the phos part is at the end of the respiratory cascade, I'm going to phosphorylate ADP and make ATP, and that's going to be just wonderful, and I'll have all this energy. So that's sort of the punchline. That's how they're supposed to work. So there's any number of ways that mitochondria can get run down. One is if you have a true mitochondrial disease. So just on the show notes, you'll see there's a note there that says most of this information excludes true mitochondrial diseases. Now, I'll put a little caveat to that. By that, I mean the known major genomic mitochondrial disorders, which can either be deadly or extremely limiting to life and to cell energy, etc. And while we'll talk a little bit about it, babies born with these diseases just are unable to operate the mitochondria in a completely normal sense. So we're really not going to talk about those disorders in this podcast. I've had a large number of pediatric patients over the years who have had diagnosed mitochondrial disorders, and what we've seen is a couple of things. One is the mitochondrial disorders get more and more known, so we're adding to mitochondrial disorders all the time. And the next thing is that if you have a real bad one, a hardwired one that is compatible with life, you may wind up with a lot of other issues that go on. And so there's special, you know, they call it mitomix. There's special nutrient substrates for those. Everything else, though, is going to be more functional. And so if something is functional, what that means is, in this context, that you have something that is broken because of either a direct attack on the mitochondria or an attack on the cells or the tissues of the organ that wears out the mitochondria, wears down the defenses of the mitochondria, which are largely the membranes, or somehow sequesters substrate so it can't get enough energy and enough substrate to produce ATP. So something functionally has gone wrong. The upside of a functional problem is that you can actually, if it's dysfunctional, you can make it refunction. So that is what we're really dealing with here. So the list of things to go through as far as how do they become dysfunctional, you've got things like low substrate. So let's say that either through a genomically predetermined problem or through deficiency or starvation or other problems like that, you have a low amount of NAD residues and a low amount of fatty acids and a low amount of CoQ10 and a low amount of all the other stuff that goes into making the things work, you're going to have problems in getting the mitochondria to work. And then what happens is that the whole cell slows down, because without the mitochondria, if you think about it, you have two sequestered regulators of every cell. One is going to be the nuclear membrane and the nucleus, which is of course going to run protein encoding and replication of cells and all that. And then you have the mitochondria, which is going to set the metabolic rate and all of the amount of ATP produced. If those two slow down, you got big problems. So if you don't have substrate going in or the area is sick around it, you're going to have these things turned down. And then your normal cell, whatever type of cell it is going to have less and less output. And as you remember, if you read in the beginning of any pathology book, pathologies start generally in the mitochondria, maybe in the nucleus, and they work outward to the organelles in the cytosol and then out to the actual cell membrane and then into the area around the cell. And as the area around the cell, cell membrane, organelles, et cetera, go less and less functional, you get a tissue problem, and then we call it a disease. So every disease pretty much is related to some level of mitochondrial dysfunction. Now, people are sicker and sicker than they used to be. And so imagine if you started out with, not a great setting. You were already not really feeding the body very well. Digestion and absorption are not going really well. All of the substrate that would go into making you healthy. So you start out kind of weakened either through chronic infections or chronic inflammation or whatever it is. And then you get sick on top of that. Well, you're starting out, on a scale of 1 to 10 with mitochondria that are like a 4, 5, 6, 7. And then you get acutely ill, you have a surgery, you have some other big stress, and now you're down to like mitochondria operating at a 4. Well, your cells are going to operate at a 4. And so if you didn't have all of the stuff to heal afterwards, you're going to be sick for a long time. This is why there a lot of people have things like post-viral syndrome. It's largely mitochondrial deficit while you're trying to come back. People, when they get a flare-up of a chronic infectious problem or they get a big uptick in their, toxicity or any other thing, or their gut quits working, et cetera, you're going to have big problems. Now, the other thing that can happen is glycolysis, which is supposed to take you down from breaking glucose down to pyruvate, and then you get to acetyl-CoA to, run on through into the mitochondria. Acetyl-CoA is going to run the TCA or the Krebs cycle to prime what goes into the mitochondria and OxPhos. So imagine if you have either a true glycolytic disorder, which do happen, those are genetic, but also what happens is, remember, when you are heavily oxidative, so maybe you have a cell membrane problem, maybe you had a mito problem, maybe you have cancer, maybe you have a number of other problems. When you are more oxidized, you are going to stop at pyruvate, and you're going to be unable to operate the glycolysis pathway above the Krebs cycle and then the mitochondria, and you're going to start to depot a lot of what? Lactic acid. Now, lactic acid can be turned back in to pyruvate, and you can go on down, but then you start to see in tissue damage that the tissue is really trying hard to move lactic acid back to pyruvate. And what happens is the person becomes sick because of partly that acidosis, partly other stuff. But what we see on their labs is what? Their LDH, lactate dehydrogenase, starts to rise. And so if you recall the issue that goes on with respect to people in chronic illness, et cetera, is that their LDH goes up, and then, you know, what do? You go and you fractionate the LDH into its isoenzymes, and then you can figure out, you know, the major area of tissues of the type of it by the type of LDH that's going up. So one of the things that you want to do as you go forward then is to look at, you know, LDH and other inflammatory markers as a surrogate for not enough pyruvate down to acetyl-CoA, more acidosis. And remember what goes along with acidosis. The LDH goes up, you're more acidic, you're going to carry more carbon dioxide in the peripheral tissues, and less O2. Less O2 means less burning in the mitochondria. So they're all related. So glycolytic disorders of the genetic type, much less common. General overall tissue damage due to chronic illness, et cetera, much more common. And this is part of the reason why in the chronically ill and cancer patients, we always follow these surrogate markers like LDH, et cetera, because you'll see it high in the sicker people. And you know then, you know, you've got a bigger problem. As the LDH goes up, and then, you know, you've got other issues. Now, if you have a true elevation of LDH, you do want to do isoenzymes and find out what general tissues, so that you'll get, you know, LDH subfractionation. And remember, the LD1-2 flip is associated with MIs, but normally you have symptoms of MI. There are LD, you know, 1 through 5, and the lab will tell you which tissue is most likely involved. My experience has been, if it's a low elevation and the person is obviously chronically ill, if they've never had them fractionated, I will, but usually you can kind of tell it's due to their chronic illness. If you have somebody who has not been chronically ill and their LDH is elevated, you definitely want to get it fractionated. Now, beyond the big name brand mitochondrial diseases that you're going to be diagnosed probably with, you know, in your first days, weeks, maybe months of life, there's a lot of other genomic effectors. And I go into this in the CE webinar, so that's something that you can look at the graphics and all that. It's not, doesn't really lend itself too well to podcasts, but you want to keep in mind that the major players, so NAD residues, coenzyme Q10, and a number of others have genetic SNPs that can show up. Now, you can have all the genetic or the mitochondrial damage that you want, and it can be totally non-genomic, which means you've got, you know, just a regular old functional beat down of your mitochondria. But in cases, if you're doing nutrigenomics, what I have seen with people is if you have the regular chronic illness beat down going on the body, which is hard. I mean, you can have perfect genetics and beat up your mitochondria. But if you have that going on and you have a, like a UQCRC or one of the NAD, you know, SNPs, et cetera, you've just got more and more trouble. And we go into kind of how to deal with those in the various webinars, and a lot of them get into that. But you do have to consider if someone's super chronically ill, and you're trying everything and you're having trouble like getting anywhere, it might be good to do some nutrigenomics and take a look at the, especially the mitochondrial, the enzymes and SNP systems. Now, what I'll tell you, having looked at a few thousand of these, is the commonality of chronic illness and mitochondrial SNPs is actually fairly low. But the important part about it is that if you have them both, it's double trouble. You have a lot of extra to do. And if you go back to the concept in most of every nutrigenomic class I've ever taught, we go deeply into differential kinetics and the idea that if I have SNPs in an area, that uses a lot of, say, a B6 and magnesium as a cofactor, and I got tons of SNPs in areas that use all that same cofactor, I am not going to efficiently use B6 and magnesium, so I'll be chronically functionally in a deficit. Well, it's the same with the mitochondria. If you have UQCRCs, for instance, where the ubiquinone isn't working right, that person needs more ubiquinone than the average person does. If they're in the NAD area, they're going to potentially need something like nicotinamide riboside oral supplementation or something to keep it going. So that's very important to consider. You know, I can say this with some confidence looking at a few thousand of them, the number of mitochondrial SNP problems that I've seen in people who have all types of chronic illness is less than I would have expected. But when it, as I say, when it does happen, it makes the healing of the chronic illness much, much more difficult. You have to look into that. Now, there's also general inflammation, toxicity, cell damage, redox problems. They all play into this too, because if you think about it, if I have, you know, a lot of toxicity and I've got cell damage and, you know, any number of other things going on, I am going to put more stress on the cell, the organelles, the nucleus to do what it is supposed to do. And, I'm going to have, you know, some moderate to large amount of issue in keeping the cell healthy. So one of the things that becomes very critical is if you look into the research about mitochondrial dysfunction, what you'll find is it's heavily associated with different types of toxins. So you have organic and inorganic toxins, and that includes things such as heavy metals, but also persistent organic chemicals, and organophosphates and all the other stuff that we're exposed to. And so the way to think about it is if you are, working with a patient and you are having a lot of trouble, getting their mitochondria and their energy back online, so to speak, after an illness or during a flare or whatever, you really got to start looking at what's going on that's sidelining this. Could be nutrigenomic, probably is inflammation, and what's the inflammation from? Is it chronic infection, autoimmunity? Is their redox just totally bereft of activity? And then the other thing is, of course, toxicity. Now, toxicity, and this includes mycotoxins, mold, and all that other business as well. So you got to think about that. The other is just general old cell damage. They've been sick so long, their phospholipid bilayer is very inflamed, it's leaky, and that tends to make the mitochondria leaky as well. Now, this is in every webinar that I've done about mitochondria and all that, but one of the things just generally that's probably the best global thing to do, unless someone's allergic to it or something, is to use curcumin. And the reason is that curcumin is one of the few things that actually will help to detoxify mitochondria. And if you do a PubMed search around curcumin and mitochondria, and then if you narrow it using different toxicity modifiers, you'll see there's quite a bit of data on that, and it's very important. It's also, as you might remember, is curcumin's one of the few things that can get metals out of the nervous system in a reliable and safe manner. So that's another real good one there as well. So you got to think about redox, you got to think about the cell's health overall, etc. Now, the other thing to keep in mind with mitochondria, and this is why in sick people we will often use the following, is the role of the T3 hormone, both on the outside and the inside of the cell, with respect to the mitochondria and the nucleus. Now, the mitochondria and nucleus obviously pretty much cannot operate without one another, and that is a super important fact to have in your mind. But when we think about the T3 hormone, of course, it's the active hormone for the most part. But what we'll forget, and there's, in some of the CE webinars, I've got drawings of this stuff, is that the T3 hormone has an inside and outside of the cell activity concurrently. So on the outside of the cell, it operates transporters that feed the nucleus and the mitochondria. T4 can't do this. And this is why your body has to make peripherally T3, and why if the T3 is low and or the T3 is low and the reverse T3 is high, you are going to have problems. And the first thing is on the outside, so I'm not talking about inside the cell yet, outside the cell, T3 operates the speed of uptake of the two substrates for the nucleus and for the mitochondria, exclusive of fats. And so that is, it operates the amino acid transporter, which directly feeds the nuclear material, and it operates a glucose transporter, which directly is, they're very dependent on T3. Now, on the inside of the cell, what does T3 do? T3 goes to nuclear receptors in the nucleus, obviously, and to where? To the mitochondria, directly. And in the mitochondria, it operates your basal metabolic rate. And in the nucleus, it is going to do what? It's going to operate your nuclear membranes. And so the job of the nucleus and the job of the cell is kept at a appropriate speed and rate. Now, I just want to riff on this just for a second. This is why if you give people T3, and sometimes just plain any thyroid hormone, but especially if you give them a product with T3 or T3 itself, and they are not ready for it, they will feel very ill. And why is it? It's because you're turning up the metabolic rate and the nuclear rate of the cell that is sick. So when that happens with people, it doesn't mean they're reacting badly to T3, but what it does mean is that their cell is not at an appropriate level of support to handle the metabolic rate and the nuclear rate rising. They need to get healed, but it's a bit of a catch-22. So in those cases, if people really react poorly to T3, you can either cut it way down or take it out of the picture for a little bit, and then really, really work on redox, so the support of tocopherols, vitamin C, and glutathione, and then work on membrane repair with phosphatidylcholine and other phospholipids, and then consider oxphos support, such as CoQ10, make sure their ferritin is in a reasonable range. Make sure that they have, you know, enough NAD if they're real bad off. You can give them oral nicotinamide riboside. We usually start with 600 a day and work people up to 600 BID to even 1200 BID with nicotinamide riboside. Works really well orally. There's other rescue things you can do, such as poly-MVA and other mitochondrial foods. Now, what about other hormones? Well, obviously other hormones get involved. So the androgens get involved at the nuclear receptors. The things like insulin help with some of the external receptors. And of course, cortisol is a direct nuclear binding hormone. And the whole thing with, you know, with all this is this gets back to, well, mitochondria sort of are the microcosm for your chronically ill patient. And one of the reasons that we always talk about, you know, this reciprocal activity between the thyroid and the adrenal hormones is that when you get into increasing the basal metabolic rate and nuclear binding, let's say, of thyroid, you're going to have nuclear binding and mitochondrial binding. What's going to happen if the adrenals are just barely teetering on health, right? So they're doing okay, but they're not great. I go now with a bunch of nutrients and support the mitochondria in the cell, and maybe the little T3 goes in, and all of a sudden the adrenals can't handle it because they're running in first gear with everybody else. I have now put more fuel in the system. I put more, trigger substrate in the system like T3 and other stuff. And now the poor adrenals cannot supply enough corticoid to go and bind at the nucleus. So it's really the place where all that reciprocity between adrenal and thyroid starts. So just as you got to be careful with T3 with people because it is going to raise nuclear and mitochondrial activity, you also have to be careful with thyroid support and nutrient support to the cells, that it will not make the adrenals technically worse, except in some cases long term. But what it does is it shows the adrenals for how weak they really are. If everybody's in first gear going forward, and I'm just sick as anything, not such a big problem. If I suddenly raise everything except one factor, whether it's the thyroid or the adrenal cortical output or the nutrients or whatever, the one factor I don't think about is going to become a problem. And it will be known very quickly that it is a problem. Now, can and do the mitochondria repair? I think this is self-evident, obviously. We'd all be dead if they didn't repair. But something to keep in mind is that the sicker your patient is, the harder it is to repair. So yes, the normal process of human health, illness, and return to health is that we have a disturbance that creates ill health, and then we have a disturbance in the body of ill health. The immune system, the endocrine system, the digestive system, the nervous system, everybody gets involved in their own way, and it creates a reaction against the illness, and we generally will return back to health. Now, that's the layout supposed to happen. What often goes on is if we are acutely ill but otherwise super healthy, we may have no problem at all, bounce right back. If we are otherwise healthy, but maybe a bit on the nutrient deficient side, which is probably the normal, situation for most humans, then yeah, we're going to have trouble, right? Because recovering the mitochondria and the rest of the cell from the illness, it's going to show how weak we were to start with. So yes, they do repair naturally. They need all their basic substrates. So they need some fatty acids. They need all the nutrient substrates. They need, you know, oxphos, to be running well, enough iron, enough CoQ10, enough NAD. They need upstream, things such as the carnitine fatty acid shuttle and glycolysis to be working well. And they need, of course, redox to keep the cytosol stable so that they're stable and all that. When it comes down to it, though, the sicker the person's been, so you get a chronically ill person, and the wind blows, and their mitochondria will just go down, you know, from, chronically ill people, if it's a 1 to 10 scale, their mitochondria may be, you know, 6 or less, and, you know, then they have a flare-up, or they have a big gut thing, or some other problem happens, you know, and they'll go down to like a 3 or a 2 or something, and that's why they're so chronically ill, because then everything just opportunistic jumps on top. So there is natural repair. Usually in the sick people, we need assistance. Now, it can be real simple. If you are just a little bit deficient and, you got kind of laid low, sometimes a good active B complex and a multi-mineral and, you know, a little bit of some extra, carnitine to help feed the system, and that, boom, you're back on track. Sometimes you need more. Sometimes you actually need recovery, substrate. So you look and, okay, their iron's okay. They got a good ferritin. We're giving them CoQ10, all of that stuff. We might need, you know, stuff still not working. Thyroid is either being dealt with, thyroid and adrenals, or they're really actually working pretty well because they were working okay before. Then you want to think about recovery things. Recovery things are going to include a small group of things, and in the CE webinars we go a little deeper into this, but recovery stuff beyond your basic nutrients are going to be things like nicotinamide riboside, as I mentioned. Very important if your NAD levels truly are on the low side. And so you want to take a look at that. And we start with 600 once a day, go to 600 BID and up to 1200 BID with NR. The other is poly-MVA. With really sick people, we start really low, like 1 teaspoon, 5 mLs once a day. And you can work them up to, 2 teaspoons, 3 times a day for a lot of folks. And it's a good, short-term, kind of kickstarter, because it actually raises all of the respiratory chain quite a bit. So that's another thing to consider. And this is all assuming you've already, you know, like we said, used the carnitine or acetylcarnitine, put in some phospholipids, et cetera. And in respect to the order of healing, if it is true what all of the pathology books have said since we discovered the internal cell mechanics a long time ago, that disease starts inside the cell, either in the nucleus, the mitochondria, or both, spreads outward to the cytosolic organelles, and then creates a sick cell, and then the sick cell creates sick tissue, etc., then we really want to be considering taking care of the mitochondria as we go along. Now, you can't always, you know, do everything all at once, of course, but if you got that patient that is, you know, what I consider the easiest one of these to deal with, someone who was healthy, but they got the flu and they have post-viral syndrome. They're just ragged out. They have no energy. That is a mitochondrial problem. And then, you know, all the other stuff for the cell. So you have to overfeed the system. You have to make sure the gut's back online so they can absorb the stuff. And what will happen is though, that patient will get better faster and they will tell you, now I feel overstimulated, so obviously they don't need all that support anymore. You back way off on everything. Someone who's a chronically ill person, they're not going to feel overstimulated for a long, long time for the most part. What you got to watch out for with the chronically ill folk is like I said, with T3, you put all this good stuff into them and they have an overreaction. They feel sicker at a higher level. And that's a thing if you haven't ever seen it. And what it is they're like, man, I started taking the, you know, the nicotinamide riboside, or I started taking poly-MVA, or I started, you know, I did a super high dose of some acetylcarnitine or carnitine, and man, I, you know, all my regular symptoms are horrible, or, you know, I took that little bit of thyroid you gave me and I feel sicker. What that body is telling you is they are too bereft of the basics to handle speeding it up. So with those folks, then you back off of the recovery and repair stuff. You put a lot of support into redox. So you've got the fat soluble redox supporters being the tocopherol, tocotrienol family, little bit of omegas, and then you've got the water solubles, the vitamin C and glutathione support, and you start there, and you put a lot of B vitamins in if they tolerate them, and you work your way up, and then you can get to the rescue stuff. So this has been a quick dive into mitochondria and how they work. And just like every other thing with human health, please keep in mind that it's a spectrum. And if you think of the left side of the spectrum as a totally healthy person who just has a bad, you know, acute illness or something or a surgery, and the right end of the spectrum is your super chronically ill person, what you do with the mitochondria and how well they heal naturally and all that stuff is on that spectrum, exactly told to you by their history. So if they have been healthy, literally healthy as a horse, so to speak, and everything's going great, and they just got knocked down with influenza, or they got a surgery or a car accident, a super big trauma, yeah, they need some support, but they're not going to need it very long. If they're on the right-hand side of the spectrum and they're the sickest patient you ever had, and you know, they sadly needed to have surgery, or they got in a car accident or whatever, you're probably already trying to recover their mitochondria, but it's going to be a bigger job because they were already beat down and now they have much more to do. Well, that is about all we can do on the mitochondria for a podcast. If you want, there'll be some links to some of the free and the other CE stuff on the inside of the website you can take a look at as well. But I'm going to sign off for right now and talk to you all very soon in podcast number 5 about autoimmunity and general concepts thereof. Thank you very much. Thank you for listening. This has been the podcast Doctor to Doctor with Dr. Paul Anderson. You can find us online at consultdra.com. consultdra.com. We'll see you all at the next podcast. And please remember, the views expressed on this podcast are those of the speakers alone and should not be construed as medical or healthcare advice. Thank you.